How many of you have a Christmas tree in your house already? Please signify. How many of you are yet to put up any Christmas decorations? Holding on. Well, the advent calendars are going. We're starting. We're on day number eight. Oh my goodness. Yeah, Christmas. If you haven't got your Christmas presents or anything, you better get thinking about it. Okay, but we're looking at today, we're looking at in this period of anticipation, of preparation towards Christmas, I want us to think about what that means. Advent is a time where we remember Jesus coming. We remember the whole world had been waiting. We remember the 300 prophecies of pointing to Jesus happened. This monumental time in history where everything was pointing to it and everything points back to it, Jesus coming. It's also a time where we think as Christians about preparing, about waiting. We have God, but he's here, but he's not totally here because we're still struggling and we still wait on him and we wait in his power and we're wrestling with things in our lives. And we have this hope in Advent, this anticipation. Hope comes from something happening in the future that we're longing for, and the whole world is longing to be redeemed. As Christians, no matter what we go through, we have a hope in Christ. And this whole thing that no matter where we are in life or what's going on, there is something. Jesus is coming. Jesus is there. His creation has been restored. At the end of this life, I am going to be with him. It's going to be better than I can possibly imagine. I don't even know how to picture it. But we have this hope, and all wrapped up in this word, Advent. But today, I want us to think about what Advent means in terms of waiting. In terms of waiting, because Advent is more than waiting. Advent is about preparing. It's about a sense of readiness. And I want us to think about that in a minute. So I'm going to ask you, we've already started a hubbub of conversation. What are you waiting for at the minute? Is there something that you are waiting for in your life? It could be big, it could be small. You only have about 30 seconds because I'm going to rush you on this morning. But talk to the person next to you. Is there something that you're waiting for? Off you go. Is there something you're waiting for? Then you that was big for you. Okay, some of you might have just come out of a period of waiting. Ashley and Miriam here, the wedding, the waiting for that, the preparing. I know some of you have recently moved house, and it's been a case of waiting and preparing and getting the house ready again for viewing and getting the house ready for reviewing. Perhaps some of you have been waiting for results. Some of you have been waiting for a job. Some of you have been waiting to move, waiting to go back home, waiting for a health issue, waiting for results about a health issue, waiting for an exam result, waiting for family, waiting for a relationship to be restored, waiting for something in our lives to be resolved where there's conflict. That is a deep question. There are some of you out there who are waiting and waiting and waiting. I wonder how good we are at waiting. Awful. I wonder if I was to do gauge your hurry sickness right now, what it would be like. Are you the kind of person who walks into a shop, sees a queue, and walks out again? If you walk into a shop and there's equal queues, do you assess the queues? That cashier is looking like she is on it today. I'm going for that queue because she is on fire. That person has a small child. The whole conveyor belt is chaos. There is no bags ready. I'm not going near that aisle. What about when you pull up to a traffic light in a car? Do you kind of assess the cars, which lane to go in? That looks like it's a sporty car. I bet that's a sporty driver in it. That's going to be a quick getaway. Are you like on the motorway when it's all jammed up? You're forever changing lanes. And you always end up in the slowest one. Always. Perhaps are you the kind of person who sends a text and then they haven't replied in 5 minutes? You're getting seriously annoyed. I know I'm bad at waiting when my electronic toothbrush has a 2-minute timer on it. Oh, it's like the longest part of my day. Just waiting for this thing to go zzz, zzz, and I can finish. Perhaps you're 10 megabyte of internet is no longer fast enough. BT, 30, 40, 50, you need more data. In a relationship, I find there's always one who's very ready and one who isn't. In our relationship, I'm going to let you guess who that is. And that's actually quite hard, actually, because we're both quite late. And that can cause some interesting conversations. But waiting. But actually, you know what? We're so used to instant things, whatever technology. Oh, we just recently bought one of those, what do you call them, Helen? Echo Dot. But I don't have to log on now. I can just, hey, Alexa, what's the weather tomorrow? Generally, I'm on my bike. How windy is it tomorrow? Is it raining tomorrow? I get the answer straight away. But I wonder what that's like. We come from this instant culture. When I think about that for my faith, how does that expectation, that general, in everything has to be now and instant, affect me in my outlook, in my faith, without me even realizing? Can I hold on to waiting? What happens when I ask God something but I don't get a reply? What do I do with that? What happens when I've got a struggle and I go to God and say, God, this is my struggle, but there doesn't seem to be a solution quickly? What do I do with that? Does it cause a disillusionment in me? Yes, it does. God, where are you? I thought you loved me. I forget that he who has begun a good work in me is still there. I forget that actually instant isn't always best. I love fresh coffee. I love the fresh coffee you do here. I'm a bit of a snob. I'm not an instant coffee drinker. You go to a house and they say, do you want a coffee? I sort of scope out the... I love home cooked. I'm not really a microwave meal kind of a guy. I'm very spoiled in our house. But these things take time. They're not instant. Good things come to those who wait, we're told. The Christian journey is one where the good stuff often happens in the waiting, and yet we're so focused on finding that result, that thing that we're waiting for, we miss what God is doing. Very quickly, let's be honest with ourselves here. Think about a time where you've been waiting for something very serious, a big thing in your life, and God has seemed absent in it. How have you felt towards God? We had this in our relationship and with having children. God, where are you in this? Why are you not coming through? Why can it not be like other people? What is happening here? God, where are you? I thought you were good God who gave good gifts to his children. What is happening? And we wait, and it seems silent. You know, some of you might have an anticipation. I talked about the schools and the excitement, and it felt like God is doing things amongst us, and perhaps there's something going on in there in your lives at the minute. There's an anticipation, an excitement. You are seeing God at work, and it is an encouragement. And we love to have people come up the front and say, this is what God is doing. Just to encourage. God is an active God. He is there in the silence, in the busyness, in the big things, in the small things. I went for a run on Wednesday. Oh, I'm way behind my slide. Sorry, keep you waiting here. We've done that one. Oh dear, it's this one. It's not the prettiest face. All right. It was a horrible part of the run. I started too quick. I was determined to do a half marathon, and I went for it. First 10K went a bit quick. I was had energy. I was enthusiastic. I went for it. And that can be what it's like in our Christian faith sometimes. We have the energy. We have the passion. At the end of the run, it was fine. You know, the last 2 or 3K, they kind of pull you over the line because it's there. You can see the finish. But two-thirds of the way into a run, you start to look like that. And it is just, I took a picture because I was thinking of this. I was thinking about how long is this taking, and how long do I have to grit my teeth and feel like this? Because every part of me wanted to stop, apart from the knowledge in my head that I had to keep going if I wanted to complete this. And in our waiting and in our lives and in our difficulties, sometimes I thought it was going to look worse than that, actually. It felt way worse than that. It just feels like everything in you just says stop. And yet, we're told about perseverance works out in us for maturity in our faith. That to grow in our faith is persevering in the tough things that sees us through. Perhaps some of us feel like David, though. All right? David says,
How long, Lord, will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts? One day, day after day, I have sorrow in my heart. Look on me. How long will my enemies triumph over me? Look on me and answer me, Lord my God. You are not alone in your waiting, guys. If you are waiting, if you're in a tough situation, you stand with the heroes of the faith. You are not alone. You have very good company. We've been looking at Abraham, at Isaac, at Jacob in the youth. And one of the key things in that is God's promises coming to fruition. Abraham at 75 years old, you're going to have a baby. Your descendants are going to be as numerous as the stars. Your descendants are going to be a blessing to all the nations. Abraham at 80 years old, you're going to have a baby. Promises we're reaffirmed, 85 years old. 90 years old, you're going to have a baby. This promise is starting to feel like it is just words. 95 years old, Abraham, you're going to have a baby. His descendants are going to be as numerous as the stars. It's going to be a blessing to the nations. 96, 97, 98. This promise is there, but nothing is happening. And he's holding on to this promise, and he's struggling. And I know he's had questions because he's working something out. He has a child with, Ishmael with Hagar? Is that right? Looking to the Bible scholars out there. I've just taught on it. Heads like a sieve. Had a child. I must have to be doing something now. I must have to be working this out myself. And God is saying, I am in control. In my time, it will happen. Joseph, what a story. 13 years in captivity, sold into slavery, put in jail, accused for things he hadn't done wrong. All the time, his faith was growing and deepening, and God was working behind the scenes in every little detail to put him into a place for his nation. Moses, growing up as an Egyptian elite, but he's an Israelite, and seeing his people suffering and that turmoil with him that bubbles out, and he strikes that Egyptian who's mistreating his people. And then flees for 40 years, herding sheep, with all that training, all that expertise, all that leadership qualities that he had in Egypt. He's now a shepherd, feels forgotten in the wilderness, waiting 40 years, people, waiting. Jesus, 30 years. And we looked at this last year. We looked at how Jesus grew intentionally in wisdom and stature and favor with God and in favor with man. Jesus, 30 years for his ministry. Waiting, preparing. And that word, he grew, we said, was an intentional word. It's not just he stood back and let life happen. He intentionally grew in those four areas. It means prokopto, it means cut a path. Jesus waited. So if you are waiting, you're in good company. Waiting seems to be the disposition of our Christian lives. Some of the themes that we see in this, though, is that no matter what you're going through and no matter how long you've been in it, God is hearing you. The Bible echoes with the words, God heard the cry of his people. God hears and understands. God was working behind the scenes. God was there. In God's timing, things came to be. Have you ever seen an interview? We get it sometimes on TV where they get one of the latest Marvel action heroes in, and they're saying, oh, what do you think of the film? And they say, yeah, I just saw it on Friday. And you're like, well, you're the main character, you seem to be in every scene. How do you not know? And sometimes in some of the like sequences, they don't know, like, you know, the series on Netflix and stuff, they don't know how the outcome's going to be. You're like, what do you mean you don't know? Well, we were just told 2 weeks ago, because they've been in front of a green screen doing their action shots, talking to a football for most of their scenes until it's all superimposed, and the director has brought this all together, and God's story is complete. And we're all waiting in our stories, and yet we don't know how we've been used. I sometimes wonder, God, what does it mean that you're using me today? It might be that I'm just meant to talk to that person in your plans today. And all that actor does is he does his part as best as he can. He prepares fully for it. And that's what God's asking us to do. There's a verse which says, it is God who works in you to will and to act according to his good pleasure. I so often think God revolves around me. My expectations, my plans. It's for his good pleasure that he uses me. It's for his plans that he's using me. God often works in the waiting, and we're not noticing what he's doing. We've had the privilege of having the Cobbies live with us. 6 months? Privilege.
they made a joke. They were saying, we can't talk about leaving because Richard gets all emotional. But do you know what I mean? They were waiting. And there was times where you're a bit frustrated. Oh, the house has fallen through. Oh, this is going. You know what it's like? It takes forever, these processes. And yet all that good stuff that we had, well, it's good for us though, of just having them live with us in our household, just those relationships made, not restored, they were never broken, just built up. I got to know my nieces and nephews in a whole new way, got to know Dave in a whole new way. We were playing music last week because we've been hanging out with instruments around us so long. All these things bubble up, talking to Helen about school's work and ministry and all this stuff. All these fantastic things happened as a byproduct that we were waiting. Who knows where God has you waiting? What good things he's doing in and around you through your waiting? And finally, well, not finally for the talk, but finally for this point, sorry. You're going to have to wait a bit longer. Finally? God is working in you in the waiting. We always think in straight lines, but God never works in straight lines. His lines are always people-shaped. One of my activities this week was drawing around someone. And it seems God's more like a river than a canal, although sometimes canals are very slow, as I found on my canal holiday. But God is like a river. He's working things in you. He's developing you. You are God's handiwork. You are his craftsmanship. He's delighting in what he's doing. And none of these things happen quickly. There's a fantastic quote here. It says, waiting is not what we do until we get what we hope for. Waiting is part of the process of becoming what we want to be. Why is waiting so hard though? Miriam, I'm going to talk a little bit about the journey to Peterborough. I hope that's okay. Waiting is hard because we follow. In fact, the Christian disposition is waiting because we're following God. I had the privilege of following Miriam to Peterborough. And it went well, didn't it, Miriam? Actually, it wasn't nearly as bad as I'm going to make out. We did make it there and on time. But I noticed that the rest of the cars had abandoned us. And I was thinking, I think we should have turned off by now. But when we're following someone, I didn't even bother with my sat nav. It's like, I'll follow Miriam. It was great on the A1, turning off the A1. And it's like, does Miriam know where she's, has she got her sat nav programmed into Peterborough or Leicester? Which I think we're going to. We were only 5 minutes, weren't we? We just went a different way. But I began to realize I wasn't in control. I began to realize I was following, and I was absolutely dependent on who I was following. And that's a hard thing, isn't it, for us? It's a hard thing to give up control to someone other than ourselves for our lives. Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers. There they are. In the 1930s? 40s? 20s? How old are some of you? 1910? Fred Astaire, known for his dancing, a phenomenal dancer. Ginger Rogers did everything he did, backwards and in high heels, like incredible. But she wasn't a professional dancer. Yet Fred Astaire loved dancing with her more than anyone else. Why? Because she followed his every step. She let him lead, and she followed him around this dance floor, watching, waiting, observing, hanging on his every move, leaning in. That's what we're called to be in our Christian lives. Waiting is not passive. Following is not passive. I was glued to Miriam's head, rear lights. Following, reading, learning, following his word, looking to God in every way. You know, Jesus in his ministry had many fans, but he had very few followers. He had so many fans that were amazed by his miracles, who were stunned by his teaching, but very few followers. If you are a Christian, if you are a disciple, you are a follower. That's what we are. We follow. The Galatians 2:20, where Paul says it so strongly, he says, I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. I live by faith in the Son of God. He has my life. I live by faith in him. He talks about being living sacrifices daily. I say, not my will, but your will. Jesus said, if you love me, you obey me, you follow me. Hardest thing going every day to say, not my will, but your will in my life. Back to this car journey.
Miriam, I've had people follow me and I've been completely lost. Like, they got suspicious when I went, you go around the roundabouts like four times, change your direction and your indicators. But I have to say, I did start to doubt. I started to say to the young people, guys, program your sat-navving because I think we're lost, all right? I don't know where, what, don't know where she's going. And they were all like busy on their phones. But then we were there, so it didn't matter. But actually, we start to doubt. We know God is a good God, right? We know that God is with us, Emmanuel, at Christmas. We know that God is for us, given everything for us at Easter. We know his thoughts are above our thoughts, his ways are above our ways. And yet, in the waiting, that little voice starts to happen. Is God good? Does he know what he's doing? Has he heard you? That doubt starts to creep in the waiting, that anger and that resentment. Why is this happening if you are good? We've looked at spiritual warfare. We've looked at how Satan is there in our vulnerable times. The Garden of Eden, did God really say? Jesus in the wilderness, we looked at not long ago, I can give you what you want. Trust in me, not God. I can meet all your needs. The first crack that we have where everything else can take root and grow, which is wrong in our lives, is the question, is God good? And as soon as we start doubting that very essential truth, everything else can start to happen. In James chapter 1, which we looked at, he talks about difficulties and trials. Consider it joy when you face trials of many kinds, because the testing of your faith can develop perseverance. Right after he talks about that, what does he warn us about? How does he warn us about being deceived? The goodness of God. Don't be deceived. Every good and perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of the heavenly lights, who does not change like shifting shadows. God does not change. He is good, despite of what's going on in your life right now. God is still good. When everything in our feelings says God has left us, God is still good. That psalm that we looked at with David, how long, Lord, will you forget me? How long will you hide your face from me? How long must I wrestle in my thoughts, day after day have sorrow in my heart? Isn't the end of that psalm. It has a but. But I trust in your unfailing love. My heart rejoices in your salvation. I will sing the Lord's praise, for he has been good to me. That is the hardest thing to do when you're resentful to God, when you feel God is forgotten, when you have anger, to go, but I will remember. I will place myself in a position where I am, as James continues to say, quick to listen to God, slow to speak to God, and slow to become angry. Because I've got all these feelings, but I need to place myself under his truth. You know, David forces himself back into this reality. He forces himself to strengthen himself in God, something that he'd been doing in his ministry since he was a young man. You might be familiar with 1 Samuel 30, where David's leadership seems to have crumbled. His men want to stone him. He looks like he's going to be killed. And what does David do in the sense of urgency of the moment? He says he strengthened himself in the Lord. I stood up here 2 weeks ago and I talked about Jesus in his ministry. He had power over darkness. Why? Because he charged himself up. He gave us this model. Right after that moment of magnitude in Capernaum, he couldn't be found because he was early in the morning, after a late night ministry, seeking his Father, realigning himself, strengthening himself. Isaiah 40, we're probably going to sing this song actually, Strength Arises, We Wait Upon the Lord. You know, it's a psalm which is responding to Israel, who are in captivity and they're crying out to God. And it's a psalm, Isaiah, it's not a psalm, Isaiah 40. And it's saying, here's the comforting words, right? Here's the comforting words. God, help me. I'm going to summarize this passage very briefly. Look at it yourself, because I will do this injustice. God says, you're nothing. You're just nothing. You have nothing of yourselves. And then it goes on to say, who can compare to God in his incredible power? And then it says, strengthen yourself in him. Just absolutely incredible. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. Then at the end of that, it says, he gives strength to the weary increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those whose hope is in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. So where are you finding your power, your energy, your strengthening, your source, your hope? In the midst of your circumstance, in the midst of your situation. I think about this quite a lot when I'm on my bike, particularly the other day. Oh my goodness, I was flying. When you cycle with a tailwind, sorry, I'm always talking about my bikes because I'm just generally biking, I guess. When you're cycling with a tailwind, you don't even realize you've got a tailwind. You can't feel it because you're flying along. You're going the same pace as the wind. You're like, I pegged it back from here the other night after the concert. I was doing 27 miles an hour and it didn't feel like I was doing anything. There's such a strong wind behind me. I was like, I have one of those, I'm sad, I've got one of those little things on my bike which tells me how fast I'm going. I think it might be a bit high at the minute. I probably wasn't doing 27, but let's believe I was, right? And I was absolutely fine. And sometimes in my ministry, it has felt like that, like God is lifting everything up. It feels like everything is just going so quickly. I look around and think, wow, everything has fallen into place. Is that what it's like to be in God's favor? Is that what it's like to have God really behind your ministry? And sometimes, yes, it is. Sometimes it's exactly like that. You can say, this is not me, guys. There's a wind behind me at the minute. God is doing stuff. I'm riding along with this. But other times, it is a headwind. Oh, cycling into Huntingdon sometimes or back, and it is just a headwind, and I'm doing 10. And it feels like I'm going uphill all the way, yet I know I'm going in the right direction. And sometimes in my ministry, it's like that. And it's not that I'm doing anything wrong. It's not that I'm not doing, but I just have resistance. I have things going on. I've got spiritual warfare going on. I've got difficulties. I'm tired. All these things crowd in. A bit like that marathon picture. Just, oh. Yet both are right. In one, I have God's strength lifting me. In the other one, I need to have strengthened myself to get through it. And with this, I close. See, waiting works. When I was a young man, I worked in an outdoor center. And I was late teens, and we thought we could sail, right? So we had these Wayfarer boats where you put like 5 or 6 kids in them. And on a moderately windy day, you take these school groups out, you sail along, the boat's like this, they're all screaming, ah, you have a great time for an hour, you come in, you change groups, and then off you go. And we thought we were good sailors, right? There's about 5 or 6 of us. And we could do that, we could bomb up and down this lake, we could do it. And it was fantastic. Then we had some old-timers join us, right? And these guys have been sailing for quite a long time, and I soon realized what the difference was between them and me. On a moderately windy day, everything was the same. But when it was really windy, when the sails were flapping so hard you didn't get in the boat, and they could still sail that thing and keep it upright, okay? I noticed that in the storms, they were ready. They were prepared. But that's not when I really noticed them. When we really noticed them, coming back to this quietness, this stillness, when it doesn't seem like anything is going on. What I really noticed then was on a completely calm day, we'd head out and it was like a pond, right? Every little ripple you could see, every little splash created ripples. There's no waves, there's no breeze. And we're there, we've got a group in our boat, we're trying to sail, and we're flapping our sails, and we're waggling our rudders, and we're going, has anyone got any, we're getting the oars out. And then we look over, and these old timers have got this boat trimmed. I don't know how they've done it. I can't even feel any breeze, but they've detected where the breeze is coming from. They've understood exactly how to set their sails. They've got that boat so level, it's just sitting there, and you just start to see some little ripples coming from their boat. And while we are frantically pummeling our sails, waggling our tillers, slapping around with our oars, they're leaving us behind. And you can just see the ripples coming off their boat, and it happened every time. And we just end up having a water fight because we couldn't do anything. Sometimes in the stillness, just God is there. Well, not sometimes, God is there. He's there. We have to lean in. We have to wait. We have to watch. Those sailors had every ounce of their being getting that boat so it could move across that water. Sometimes we only expect to see God in the big stuff and the dramatic things and the big callings and the big voices. God is there in the everyday. God is there in the stillness. Lean into him. God is there in the storms. Strengthen yourself in him. Wait well. Thank you very much.